We at the Other Side of Hell podcast are not therapists, doctors, or counselors. We're just two guys who have been through hell and come out the other side.
Please be aware, we may talk about drinking and drugging in detail. Anyone struggling with addiction may find this triggering.
Our goal is to share our stories, explore our struggles, and connect with others through our experience.
Remember, we are not alone. There is hope, and together we can get better.
What's up, world? I'm Willie.
And I'm Cameron.
And we're back. And the Other Side of Hell podcast.
Yep. That's what I was going to say.
Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
I feel very well.
You look good.
I think I'm amazed. Like, I sit back and I look at the progress over the last little while, and I'm just fucking amazed that we're still here this long later, and people are still listening and gaining value and helping us out, you know, giving us feedback and loving on us.
Dude,
helping
we're so,
us be sober.
We are so cool.
You are.
No, both of us as a couple. Couple of cool guys.
Yeah. I can't believe, like, it's been, you know, we're really doing it, ain't we, buddy?
What is that?
Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are Dumb and Dumber, aren't we? Yeah, for sure we are, man. We are doing it. And this is, it's cool to have something that we get to do, yeah. A platform like this where we can talk about all this stuff. And we recently hit a milestone.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, it goes back to, like, I can't believe how well I identify with so many people that, you know, I've identified with everybody that's ever been on the show. Everybody that shared their story, I've been able to identify with. Everybody that's been on the show as a guest, I've been able to identify with. So many different situations, and we've all come from so many different places. And
yeah.
We're never going to ask people to do anything that we're not willing to do ourselves. And so we thought it would be nice to kind of come back around and share our own stories at yeah. this milestone, right? So we have an amazing war story today from a very amazing guest.
From he's just somebody of high stature who we look up to and receive a lot of wisdom from.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's Willie's war story.
Willie,
right here.
After 100 episodes, we revisited our own stories.
Yeah, and how they've changed. So, yeah. I had the honor of doing episode 1, and now I have the honor of doing episode 101, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. I can't ever remember. Cameron gives me a list of rules before the show, and then I blow them. Like, I guess start talking about numbers and all that stuff, because I'm an alcoholic, man, and I just run through and do whatever I want. You know, selfishness is the core of my disease.
Yeah.
You know? So, and it was good to share and reflect and go back and see how much growth I've actually had over the course of this podcast. And you know, having this platform has made me really want to be the person that I portray on this show. You know, this guy that is working towards a better self, working towards a better world. You know, and so when I start falling short of that, because I have this platform, I feel this responsibility to be honest, open, and willing to grow along spiritual lines and grow along physical lines and grow along financial lines and grow along all these lines that make up the human condition, right? I feel responsible to live in that life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and do the things that we talk about and take the suggestions from the people that come on the show. And sometimes I end up in that place where I'm living in my disease, regardless of how hard I try. And so Cameron listened to my story before the show and came up with the topic of untreated alcoholism.
Yeah.
Based on, I talk about it a lot. I talk about untreated alcoholism a lot.
You talk about it a lot lately.
Yeah.
It's a big part of your, a part of your story revisited
right now. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was definitely, and it's worth discussing. It's worth talking about it, for a lot of reasons. I think, you know, as I sort of get to the stage that I am currently at in my own journey, I realize more and more how common it is for people to, from what I hear and understand in the rooms and the people that we talk to, is it seems like somewhere around the 5-year mark, people can get into this mode where they start going a little crazy.
Yeah.
Right. And the untreated alcoholism creeps in. I think what was working yesterday doesn't work anymore. And we're sort of faced with a new moment of surrender.
Yeah.
And figure out, you know, how to move forward from that point. And that's been my experience. And I can only call that state that we're in, where the insanity starts creeping back in. We may not want a drink or a drug, but we start feeling that alcoholism creeping in, and we start going insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think untreated alcoholism is for sure a worthy topic. And it's something that, again, that I know you talk about more and more in your story.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah.
You know? And so I guess, like, coming around to it, like, you know, how do we identify alcoholism in the first place? Like, you know, how do I come to a place where I believe that I'm alcoholic, right? And what do I mean by alcoholic? And so, and I share a little bit about it in my story later on. But I have to come to a point where I think that there's something wrong with the way that I'm living my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely consumed with drugs and alcohol. I identify as an alcoholic, even though drugs are a huge part of my story.
Right.
Huge, like, right hand in hand, one without the other. And so I was thinking a while back, I was trying to remember the first time I heard the word alcoholic, you know, and what it meant to me back then. It's hard for me to remember the first time I heard the word alcoholic or alcoholism, because there was always alcoholics in my life.
Sure.
You know, even before I was necessarily one, maybe I was always one and just hadn't drank yet. But, you know, I remember I had some friends whose parents were by definition alcoholic. I imagine they would call themselves alcoholic. I haven't seen them for a long time, but, you know, what I used to think the word alcoholic meant was that it was somebody that could handle their booze.
Yeah. 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 I'd say that was fair. Or just somebody that drank a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
It sounded kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it didn't have that negative stigma at first. When I first started using the word, or I started calling myself an alcoholic, it just meant that I drank a lot.
Yeah. And I was good at it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that definition definitely changed as I started going down the path of alcoholism, where I continued to drink long past the time I wanted to, you know. And I've called that line, and you may have heard on the show a time or two, you know, I call that line where we stop bragging about how much we're drinking and using, we start lying about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, that started very young. I started lying about it. I had to. When you start using and drinking at the age that I did, most adults don't want to hear that you're using and drinking. So when the question is asked, have you been drinking? The answer is absolutely no.
Right.
When the cops ask you if you're high, the answer is absolutely no.
Yeah.
it's kind of always been a lie, but I had to get educated on what the word meant, you know, for me. And so I had to go to a place where there was other alcoholics talking about what that word is and what they mean by alcoholic, you know? And so, it's been quite a journey from it going from, you know, me believing that an alcoholic is a person with a drinking problem to a person with a spiritual problem.
Right.
You know, and that concept has changed for me over the year. Alcohol was a solution for the problem that I had with myself and the world around me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess when I say alcoholic, what I mean is I can't handle life on life's terms without some kind of lubricant or buffer. My emotions are a mess and I don't know how to deal with normal situations like other people seem to.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right to me, especially when I think about what it means to be in untreated alcoholism. I would say it's exactly that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because I want to be clear, like, untreated alcoholism doesn't mean that I'm drinking.
Absolutely not.
Untreated alcoholism just means that for me, with the definition of alcoholism being as you just referenced, I'm currently living in the throes of untreated alcoholism by not managing that spiritual malady.
Yeah.
And I can't handle life on life's terms. And I completely turn inward, and I have a hard time living under the circumstances that life is presenting to me.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I think about untreated alcoholism, I think so much about the end result, because oftentimes what I have found or what I have seen is those people who are affected or suffer from untreated alcoholism, they most often don't actually go back to the bottle.
Right.
It most often ends in suicide. And that's been what I've witnessed. Would you say that's a fair?
Yeah. I mean, the people that I've known that have come into the rooms with long-term sobriety that went back out have pretty much all died.
Mm-hmm.
Not very many of them ever made it back.
Yeah. Well, because I think about, and you and I have known several people who, you know, were in the rooms of alcoholism who had a good amount of long-term sobriety, who ultimately committed suicide,
mm-hmm.
Having not gone back to a drink,
mm-hmm.
right? They didn't go out and then commit suicide. They committed suicide based on the fact that they still could not deal with life on life's terms.
Yeah.
And they had removed the solution in a way by removing the alcohol.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a scary place to be. Like, I know you talk about it in your story, but for you, I remember talking to you when you were going through it. You were absolutely frightened, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You say
that. Yeah, what ended up happening was, you know, around 5 years, like you were talking about, I wasn't very happy.
Right.
I was doing all the things that was suggested to the best of my ability. As I remember, you know, I had a service position. I was going to meetings, sponsoring. I had gone through the steps. I was praying to a higher power. And still a lot of negative thinking, a lot of negative self, you know, looking at myself negatively, still a lot of fear and that kind of stuff. A lot of, you know, food consumption and lack of money management. And there's still a lot of unmanageability, and I didn't understand why my life wasn't working out. And the idea of a spiritual malady kept coming up for me. And I didn't have a real good concept of what that meant,
mm-hmm.
right? Because spiritual was always just so elusive to me. It seems so natural for some people, but for me, I had to be able to grab it and tangible, hold on to it.
You need something tangible.
And be able to identify it and recreate that for myself, you know, and have your experience be my experience. And when that stuff didn't happen over and over and over again, I found myself at a loss, and I did not want to be sober and miserable, and I did not want to be happy and drunk, you know, like the idea that being able to use and drink ever successfully has been lifted from me completely. And it mm-hmm. was at that time as well, but I didn't know what to do. And so, I decided to, you know, as the best I could, let go of my concepts of God completely. And at the time it seemed like a pretty logical idea.
Sure.
You know, I tried all the religious prayers as best I could, you know, getting on my knees, praying, looking for answers, looking for signs, listening to other people's experiences, reading the Bible, reading the Book of Mormon, just, everywhere that I could try to grab a hold of this God that didn't work for me, I tried. And when it continued to not work, I had to find something else. And the idea of letting go of it completely came to me. And so I did. I was able to do that through some I don't know what else to call it other than spiritual work, right? Like I did these spiritual things to let go of that. One of the things that helped me out a lot was a book called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh, you know, and I listened to that over and over again. Another thing that helped me let go of that God idea was going on a walkabout and spending some time alone in the woods in meditation. And then looking into, you know, what is Satanism? What is atheism? What is agnostic? What are all these things that people keep talking about? What would life be like without God? You know, can I stop praying? You know, I got used to just doing responsible prayers, mandatory prayer type prayers, you know, I would pray, but it felt like it was mandatory. Like I had to do this.
Forced.
Yeah. You know? And so I got used to doing that kind of stuff. And when I came off a mountain, an atheist, it was really good for me and it was something that I needed, but fast forward, you know, 4 or 5 years living in atheism without ever saying a single prayer, with in sobriety, like I did this in sobriety, fast forward, no prayer, no connection to a power greater than myself other than what I believed would work, which was the rooms and the people in it.
The rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, people in sobriety in general.
Yeah.
You know, what ended up happening, you know, trying fitness, like I got really into fitness and dieting and all these physical activities, you know, I was doing all these physical things. And spiritually I slowly started getting sick. I found myself in a state of desperation, living in selfishness, which I think is a great definition of alcoholism, right? And selflessness is a great definition of treated alcoholism. Like when I'm able to see you past myself, right? And so I needed to go through that stuff, man, so that I could get a clear understanding that the alcohol was definitely, truly not the problem.
Right.
Because up until that point of a second surrender, going through 5 years and coming up on 10 years and going through that state of darkness while sober and not having a solution for it, the people weren't working. The meetings weren't working. The meditation wasn't working. The exercise wasn't working. The diet plan wasn't working, you know, saving money, spending money, you know, none of the stuff that was working for the previous 4 years was working. I was left with the only solution that I could possibly grab a hold of was that there's something that I'm missing. And when I go back and I look through like Charlie's four pillars of sobriety, you know, that make long-term sobriety, I had the community, I had the program, right? I had somewhere to be. All those things. And the one thing that continually popped up that I was missing was a connection with a power greater than myself.
Right.
And, I was basically spiritually forced into a position of willingness to go, fuck, I'm absolutely living in alcoholism. Everything in my life feels the same as it did when I was drinking. The only thing I'm not doing is drinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like that's sort of the definition that I want to hold on to is exactly what you just said. Like everything feels like it did when I was drinking. I'm just not drinking, because I feel like for me, like I can remember exactly how that felt. I'm just completely hopeless. There's no point to anything, and I have no clue what to do about it.
Yeah.
Right. And so. To find ourselves in that point, in that position where you said, you know, you had a second surrender. What do you think, because I think that this is an interesting point to talk about for anybody who's listening, who may have that going on. What do you think, what did you surrender to? You know, when we talk about surrender, like, are we surrendering to the fact that this is the problem really is spiritual in nature, and that I need to attack it from that sort of angle as opposed to all these other things that I'm trying? Or are we surrendering to the fact that, you know, that there is still a solution and I'm not it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, both of those things, I guess. I don't know. Like, I surrendered to the idea that I can't do this on my own, you know? And I talk about this in my story, but, there's three fundamentals before you start working the steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the ABC. One, that I am alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life, right? And so I was looking at this life that I was living, where I had already, you know, started my own company and was living financially on my own means, you know, kind of my own seventh tradition, supporting myself and my family, and everything that I was doing was through my own efforts, right? My career. I had a great workout routine. I was losing weight. I was finally feeling, you know, having that body that I thought was going to make me happy. Continued going to meetings, and I was still getting a lot of positive feedback about my message. And, you know, even as an atheist, going in and being able to explain how the program was working for me without a God.
Yeah.
I was getting a lot of feedback and being able to connect with people who kind of felt that same way. Like, the evidence for God is pretty fucking thin,
mm-hmm.
right? Type stuff. And being able to explain why I believed that stuff, you know, so getting the feedback and not having a whole lot of unmanageability, like, as far as like it was when I first got sober. And so, like, having all those things, connecting with people and going to meetings and then still feeling that darkness, I was able to surrender to this idea that the one thing that's probably missing is a connection with a power greater than myself. And so how am I going to surrender with it? And when I go back and I look at those ABCs, right, all that unmanageability equals alcoholism for me. Not the drink, but the unmanageability, right? I used alcohol to manage the way that I felt about my life being unmanageable. And so I'm alcoholic. My life is unmanageable. Probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism, which means none of the people in the meeting. I couldn't do it on my own. All that stuff that was working the prior 4 years wasn't working. I couldn't spin my way out of it. I couldn't talk my way out of it. None of that stuff. You know, I couldn't have enough sex or food or any of the stuff that is on the physical plane could relieve me of that, because if it could have, I would have taken it, because I don't want to be a God guy. I have a pretty good reputation around not being a God guy. That kind of feeds my ego, you know, and I enjoyed that prestige of feeling different in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, being able to stay sober without a power greater than myself. But my own efforts and the efforts of the people around me cannot relieve me of that insanity and that darkness and that fear and that desperation of wanting to feel okay. And see, God could and would if he were sought. And so what am I to do? Either become willing and surrender to the willingness to be accepting of the possibility of a power greater than myself. And what am I willing to do to demonstrate that willingness?
Mm-hmm.
Or go on to the bitter ends, which would ultimately for me probably end in a drink, which would end in, at this point, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows how bad it would get at this point. And so, I mean, it all started with, you know, okay, God, right? And it's been an interesting journey ever since, because, you know, the evidence for God for me is still pretty fucking thin.
I mean, it is what you think it is. It is whatever you want it to be. Yeah. I can look at a lot of things and see God in them, or I can look at those same things and see coincidence, you know?
Like, yeah.
The question is for me and for us today, like, what am I going to choose to call it?
That's it. Right. I get to decide,
right,
whether it's a coincidence or it's a gift, or it's from, you know, it is God.
Mm-hmm.
right? I get to decide what that is, make mm-hmm. a decision on whether that's God or whether that's just happenstance.
Yeah, the truth is that when I look at those things and I see God, and I look at those things and I choose to see that as God working in my life, I seem to get along better, because that means that there's something that's more powerful than me that's running the show. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to maintain that appropriate level of humility in order for me to navigate life on life's terms in a way where I'm not constantly resisting it.
Yeah.
And constantly trying to inject my own will into everything.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a place I had to get to for myself as well. And it's a place that I can dip in and out of. Of course, you know, I'm constantly trying to take my own will back. But it for sure means to me, the ability to see God working in my life, is a choice that I make today in order to maintain that right size.
Yeah. And not too big, not too small.
Just me, you know, just exactly me. Because, and that was another thing that you said in your story that of course I identified with, is that I either felt like I was much better than you, or I either felt like I was much worse than you. And you said in your story, and usually it was the latter.
Yeah.
And you know, that was my experience as well. I never felt, I never had that Goldilocks camera where it was just totally appropriate.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that sort of part and element of the program or of my sobriety has allowed me to do. And so I think oftentimes when we talk about untreated alcoholism, I think it really is, it comes down to, that spiritual aspect.
Yeah.
Anytime for me that I start feeling the insanity creep back in, I ask myself where I'm at spiritually. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on with my spiritual program? Am I praying? Am I looking for God in my life? Because sometimes it doesn't come natural for me to just see God in everything, right? I'll say this, right? I can look at, and I think that this is why I, and maybe a lot of people also gravitate towards nature, being outdoors. I can look at so many things in nature, a sunset, right? A beautiful lake, just animals, deer running through an orchard, whatever. I can see that stuff and see God in that. Very, very, very easily. But it's not easy for me to see God in that fucker that just cut me off, you know, in traffic, or my response to that. And so I have to look for God in a lot of these places. And when I'm able to do that and to sort of maintain that spiritual way of life, in those instances, I just find navigating everything so much easier, right? Because I'm able to do it in a way where I'm not in charge.
Yeah.
And I'm not operating on my will.
Yeah.
And it just, when I let go and let God, the things that are supposed to happen, happen. Not the things that I want to happen, but the things that are supposed to happen. And, you know, and oftentimes they're so much better than
yes.
the things that I want. Right. And I think that it's important to talk about that spiritual aspect of the program, because I don't even want to say the spiritual aspect of the program, the spiritual aspect of our disease.
Okay.
Because that absolutely for me has to be, something that I am in constant, that I am constantly working on. That's like razor sharp. If that part of my program is razor sharp, then generally the rest of my program falls where it will.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about untreated alcoholism, I think that that's more what we're talking about is you know, a lack of spirituality,
yeah,
or a spiritual connection. Do you agree?
I think that's a huge part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's hard to be spiritual and fearful at the same time. It's hard to be, manageable and unmanageable at the same time. It's hard to be loving and hating at the same time. Right. Mm-hmm. Those things seem to be like oil and water. And when I think of the word disease, or I think of the word alcoholism, you know, or alcoholic and those things and what they mean to me, you know, I truly do believe that alcoholism is a disease.
Sure.
You know, yeah. And I think that, it affects me in my mind capacity and in what else can I call other than my spiritual capacity, you know, because, when I'm living in a state of fear, right? Like the guy cutting you off, right? The only reason that I can get mad about somebody cutting me off in traffic is because I'm thinking about me and what I have to do. Me, right? And now this guy fucking cuts me off, and I might be an overthinker. I don't fucking know. But when I analyze my behavior in those situations, I look at and I go, okay, I'm upset at this guy fucking cutting me off because I think I need to be somewhere more important than he needs to be somewhere, or my fucking lane is more important than his lane, mm-hmm. or what I have going on, nobody's considering. And so now I get into this place where I'm using anger over fear because I'm afraid that I'm not going to get something that I want, right? I'm going to lose something that I have, or, you know, one of those things. And so, When I'm able to break all that stuff down and look at my thinking behind it, I can go to moments where I've been cut off in traffic and I'm able to say, God, I hope everything's all right for that guy.
Mm.
Right. And I think that that's spiritual.
For sure.
like who gives a fuck?
Yeah, that's for sure spiritual response.
Yeah, who gives a shit? Mm. Like hopefully everything's all good, or when you hear those sirens, because it's just such a better place to be in.
Right.
You know, it's such a better place to be in for me to look at the world around me and be concerned for the people that are rushing and honking their horns and being angry and shaking their fists at everything that goes on and all those things, because I've been on both sides of that. I've been the guy shaking his fist, and I've been the guy being compassionate towards that, you know. I think that for whatever reason, and I can't tell you why, I was given a program to relieve me of the disease of alcoholism on a daily basis, contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So what do I do to treat my alcoholism in mm-hmm. that spiritual condition? And so one of the biggest things that I can do today, regardless of the thin nature of the evidence of God, is choose to believe that I'm sober here today by grace. Right. And when I have to break down the reasons why I believe the things that I believe. I always have. Like anybody that's listened to the show for any period of time, I pretty much have a reason that I believe everything that I believe. I pretty much have a reason for everything I say and do the things that I do. And the spirituality part of this thing is just one thing that I just have to let be, because I have not been able to fucking dial it in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have not been able to grab a hold of a concept of a solution, spiritual based, that I can fucking definitely like be sure, like this is it. Well, I have to just decide to believe it.
I think where we get lost is we try and wrap our head around something that's bigger than us.
Yeah. Well,
you know, like, and that's my own experiences. Like I've had to let go of that. Like I've had to understand that I'm not meant to understand. Like it's not something that's even possible for me. It's bigger than I'm able to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that to me, it makes sense. I'm like, well, that's why I can't fucking wrap my head around it, because it's so much bigger than me, and that's why it's so powerful. Yeah. That's why it has that ability. That's why it brings us together. That's why it brings those people together that we've talked to, you know. And that's and it's just it's a force, it's an energy that's so much bigger than my finite brain can understand.
I don't like it.
I know you fucking hate it. And that's the thing. It's like, so what? Like you're an alcoholic. Of course. Yeah. Like we want fucking what we want. We want to understand it. We want the evidence. We want something tangible, like you said. So I think that makes sense, but
today I'm okay without it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're a big part of helping me with that, you know, because I've watched you through this entire journey since we've been friends, you know, and before the podcast and everything that we've done, you know, the whole time you've been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't need to know. Every time I try to know. And for me, it's kind of like, you know, super like difficult mathematics or fucking rocket science or, you know, I like to look at pictures of space, but if you try to tell me the formula, I'm not going to give a fuck. I'm just going to enjoy the pictures of space. Right. Sure. But for whatever reason, it's not that way with me and God. And today it's so much better than it's ever been, you know,
I love hearing that.
Having the understanding that I went through that period of atheism and I was able to completely let go of the God I was given at birth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And to start having what Jackson from Stay Stopped always talks about, having my own experience with a power that's greater than myself. Right. And so like one of the things that I always want to share for people, and I don't know why, but, I want to share, like, the reason that I find the evidence for God so thin is that if you take anything else in science, right,
mm-hmm.
you can take, like let's say gasoline, for example, right? You can give me a formula for gasoline, and if I have all the ingredients for that gasoline and I do it exactly the way that it's outlined in that, I can recreate that gasoline, and I can do that with medication or houses or anything that's blueprinted out. Right. And so we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they give us this blueprint, or we come into recovery and they give us this blueprint that's going to lead us to a relationship with a power greater than myself. And I sit there and I go through that blueprint and I listen to your experience with a power greater than myself. And I'm doing the exact same thing you are. I'm going to meetings, I'm working the steps, I have a sponsor, a service position, I'm being honest, I do all those things, and my experience isn't the same as your experience.
Sure. Yeah, right? I mean, think about that. Like from a scientific perspective, it's because your base element is different.
Right. Well, what do you mean?
It means like you're starting out with different chemicals, right? Like if you apply that formula to me, you're going to get a different result because I'm different than you.
Right. Right.
Right.
But I'm still, the formula is the same.
The formula is the same.
But we all have these different experiences.
Right.
And so I want us all to be able to have the same experience so that I can go and say, this is the way to fucking do it. And this is the thing to expect. Right. So, but I get my own experience with a power greater than myself. You get your own experience. We all get our own experiences in this life. And the cool thing about that is that we can all be in the same car looking at the same sunset and all see something completely different.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, what I do think is that the disease of alcoholism based in selfishness is dangerous. And it's a place that affects all people involved negatively. And so treating your alcoholism some way, shape, or form is better for the entire world around you.
Amen.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has been for me.
It's yeah. What I know the opposite is true.
Yeah.
When I am in the disease, everyone around me is affected.
Yeah.
And that's not how I can live today. That's not how I want to live today.
No.
Like I love them too much.
Yeah.
I love myself too much.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Break those chains of selfishness. It's pretty wild.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's always been kind of an internal calling to do better than what I had given myself. Right. Always. Like every time I felt smaller, there was this idea at the back of my head going, that's not true. You know, this isn't true. You know, you're not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know that at a deep level. Yeah. Push it away.
There's a part of me that wants to call that God.
Yeah. Why not?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I feel that there is that sort of voice within everybody. And I feel like that's why we have these things like guilt. That's why we have shame, mm-hmm. is that because there is this part of us that says, you know, this is not what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. The conscience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wes, my old coach, he always says that the conscience is the authentic voice of God.
Mm-hmm.
It never lies to you.
Yeah. Right? I like that.
So I could get down with that, you know, at a deep level. I have to say, like at a deep, deep level, I know that there's something greater than myself that gives a fuck about me. At the core of myself, I'm connected to that power that's greater than myself, and it lets me play around on this plane.
How cool is that to hear those words come out of your mouth?
Yeah.
Compared to your story in episode one.
Yeah, yeah.
And not that it was a bad story.
No, like, that's just where I was at.
Yeah, like, and there's, like, it's just, it's been so cool to see this journey.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just really
a little contrast there, you know. So, like I said, we're not going to ask anybody to do anything we're not willing to do. All these things, you know, we want to get out there and get vulnerable and let our listeners and viewers and friends and family, you know our stories too, you mm-hmm. know, for everybody that hasn't had an opportunity to hear our story as it's outlined in this program. You know, we want to take that opportunity at the beginning of this next, however many episodes this lasts, and share our experience. So, what do you say?
Let's do it, dude.
Yeah. Well, without further ado, here's my war story. This week's war story is brought to you by Brainwashed Coffee. Brainwashed Coffee is a damn good coffee with a damn good cause. 50% of all proceeds go back into the recovery community, which makes it a perfect partner for us here at the Other Side of Hell podcast. With delicious blends like Coffee Commitment, Found a New Freedom, we drink a hell of a lot of it here, and it gives us the energy we need to deliver a quality show. Right now, you can get $5 off your coffee purchase at brainwashedcoffeeco.com using promo code OTHERSIDE. Clean your bean, Brainwashed Coffee. Now, without further ado, here is this week's war story. Hi, I'm William, an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 17th, 2011. Currently on step 10 in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And my sponsor works the steps, and recovery has given me everything that I have today. What can I say? You know, it really is amazing to be able to be on this side of the table and be sober and be grateful for being sober and be grateful for my past. That's not something that I've always been able to do, is be grateful. And so, you know, I want to go back. I used and I drank my whole life. I mean, for as long as I could remember, I used and I drank. And, you know, it started with, I mean, really elementary, just dabbling in stuff. When I was a kid, it wasn't uncommon for adults to be giving us alcohol and letting us take cigarettes and stuff like that. But we would take beers and we would take cigarettes and we'd go down to the forest and we would drink, and it was just always there. It was just always a part of everything that I did. And, you know, one of the things that I remember as a kid is that, you know, I always really wanted to belong somewhere. I never really felt like I belonged anywhere. And so, being really sensitive to other people's energies, I would gravitate towards whatever high energy situation was around me. And it's always kind of been that way. I've been really sensitive to what people's emotions are and what people are going through. And I was always that kid in school where,
You know, like if you started laughing, I started laughing louder. If you were trying something, I tried it harder. If things were hard, I would quit. And if things were easy, I wouldn't want to do it. So, you know, I was kind of a mess. And I think I probably had ADHD growing up. Just they never diagnosed that kind of stuff. You know, when I was a kid, kids got to be kids. And I rode my bike without a helmet and you know, ran around stealing shit from grocery stores and you know, being nervous around girls and having that nervous disposition. And I started young, you know, I mean, fifth, sixth grade, I was smoking regularly. I mean, I started smoking as soon as I could light cigarettes, but by fifth, you know, fourth, fifth grade, I was smoking regularly, getting in trouble. By sixth grade, I was, you know, smoking pot. Seventh, eighth grade, it was common. I was already getting in trouble, getting arrested by ninth grade. Crimes are a big part of my story. And I had a lot of problems. You know, they'd been trying to get me sober for a long time, even before I think I was an alcoholic. And so as time moved on, I became alcoholic. I didn't mean to become alcoholic, but I did. And I say that I'm alcoholic because I use and I drink when I have every reason not to. And once I start, I cannot stop without some type of help. And I came in and out of sobriety so many times, in and out and tried it. And every time I'd go to jail, which was a lot, I have over 20 arrests on my record. A lot of them are for like probation violations on the same crimes and stuff like that. But that, you know, they were all drug and alcohol related, whether I got a charge for drugs and alcohol, the crime was incited by drugs and alcohol. Either I was getting and finding ways and means to get more, or I was intoxicated or something. You know, I never went to jail sober, not ever. And so, you know, drugs and alcohol turned me into a person that I didn't want to be. And I didn't mean to become that way. So, you know, from the time I was a little kid until I was 33 years old, I tried to use drugs and alcohol as the solution for my problem. The problem was I couldn't deal with life on life's terms, and I couldn't deal with myself on a regular basis. I didn't have any direction. I didn't have any belief in myself. I didn't have any belief in the world around me. I constantly tried to believe in a God that wasn't mine for help. I lied, manipulated. I didn't know how to be honest with anybody. I cheated on everybody I was with, and I tried to take anything from out there to put in here to make this feel better. And for a long time, the drugs and alcohol worked. They would numb me out to the world around me, and they'd make my problems not seem as bad. On June 27th, 2011, I was knotted out in a rest stop in Utah. Between Utah, Ogden, Utah, and Evanston, Wyoming. I had come down to Utah from Wyoming to pick up some drugs, and the drug deal went bad. I gave my friend some money to go and run. The money wasn't mine in the first place. He ran to go get the dope. I never saw him again. He ended up stabbing somebody that night. I went to prison, and I spent the next couple of days trying to scrape together some gas money, trying to find him, do stuff like that. Now, I am a meth addict and I am a heroin addict. And at the time I had heroin, but I didn't have any meth. And so I naturally needed to get some sleep. While we were down here, we decided we're going to steal some groceries and, you know, went to a grocery store and tried to leave with a basket full of groceries. You know, when I'm out there, everything is mine. Everything is up for grabs, and I don't pay for anything. I don't pay for anything. I pay for, you know, when it comes to spending money, I spend my money on drugs, gasoline, and cigarettes. And that's because those are the three things that I can't really steal that well. If I can get away with any of those things, then I'll steal them, because everything must go to my disease. Everything must go to the monster. And so we went to that grocery store. When you put hands on a theft prevention officer, it turns from shoplifting to strong arm robbery. Now it's a violent crime, and the cops were looking for me for a violent crime. I fell asleep at that rest area trying to get back home, and I never made it. I woke up with the yelling of an officer next to my window with a gun pointed in my face, screaming to wake up. And he was putting me under arrest for strong arm robbery. I had drugs on me and was being looked for. I was surrounded by four different law enforcement agencies. It was the Utah Highway Patrol, Morgan County Sheriff, Weber County Sheriff, and the Ogden City Police Department. And they arrested me that day. And I went back to jail again at age 33 for the same shit I was doing when I was a teenager. I had been broken, you guys. Like the thing of my life was I was just so tired of hating myself. I was tired of living in that life of desperation, but I didn't know any other way to live. I'd been in and out of the rooms, but I didn't believe that I could get sober. I didn't believe that I could be the one to grab a hold of a program that could change my life for the better. I didn't know that I could be the voice of inspiration. I didn't know that I could be the voice of reason and have sanity restored to me. I didn't have belief in myself, and I needed to find that in the lowest places possible. And so, you know, that day I went to jail, I've never forgotten the sound of that cop's voice, and I'm never forgetting the look in his eyes, because that day, it wasn't the first time that I had a gun pulled on me. It was the last time I had a gun pulled on me. And as I looked down the barrel of that gun into that officer's eyes, I could see that he was absolutely 100% ready to put me down if he needed to. And I look back at that moment, and I can see that that is what I like to call my moment of incomprehensible demoralization, because that cop could see me for exactly what I was at that time. You know, he would have shot me if he needed to in the duty of law and protecting the society in which I just ravaged to death with my disease. He could see that I was the guy that would, you know, take advantage of his daughter. I'm the guy that would steal his mother's purse. I'm the guy that would break into his garage or his neighbor's garage. I'm the guy that would sell his kids drugs or, you know, have an affair with his wife. I was the guy that had no morals or standards. And I was the guy that was dangerous, driving intoxicated everywhere that I went. And he could see me for exactly what I was at that time. And if he would have put me down, if he would have shot me that day, he would have shot me in honor of his duty to protect society against people like me. And I would have ended up on the news as a drug addict, dead, shot by an officer wanted for a violent crime. I wouldn't be this person that's sitting here today sober. So I'm very grateful for that moment in my life. I'm very grateful for the clarity that's come around because of that. You know, I went to jail and I ended up spending 5 months in jail that time. And because I was in a different state and the judges didn't know me and the officers didn't know me, I was able to kind of ride through under the radar. And I wanted to finally get sober. I had to kick in jail this last time. I was strung out on heroin meth. I was taking a lot of prescription pain medication and drinking a lot, you know, and so I was trying to numb the voice of hatred that I had inside of me. But as I said, they were trying to get me sober most of my life. And so I was familiar with programs like Alcoholics Anonymous and programs like Narcotics Anonymous. I was familiar with churches and prayer and, you know, leaning on people and that kind of stuff. I was never in my life truly hated by other people. I was always pretty much generally loved. I was just hated by myself. You know, I never saw myself the way that other people saw me. I never saw myself as a good person. I never saw myself. All I could really ever see in me were the flaws. I don't know why I got that. Maybe it's perfectionism. Maybe it's a delusion of self, but I never felt right sized. I either always felt way better than or way less than everybody else around me. And usually the latter. I usually felt way less than. And so when I went to jail this last time, which is almost 10 years ago now, I sat in there and I read the solution in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous again. I did that 5 months, and I say that I'm alcoholic because I use and I drink when I have every reason not to, but also because in the literature that I read, I could identify with the different ways of trying to stop, the different outcomes of my, you know, spurts and sprees of alcoholism. I could recognize the destruction that they talk about in the literature of AA and NA. You know, I could see that every time I tried to stop, it was in vain. I would delude myself into thinking I could only drink beer or just smoke pot, or I could put a timeline on how long I could go without it and reward myself later. Or, I could try to convince myself that I needed a certain medication or this type of therapy or this relationship, or I needed to move to this place or that place. There were so many different ways that I tried to stop. It took me a long time to really dive in and grab a hold of the spiritual aspect of this illness. You know, I knew that I was powerless over using and drinking. I had heaps and heaps of evidence piled up against me on that, because every time I took a drink, I took another drink, whether it was a moment after that drink or a day after that drink. And once I started drinking, everything else came back into my life. All the drugs, all the violence, all the low standards, and you know, all the bad things that I didn't really want came back into my life every time that I took a drink. And every time I took a drink, the physical compulsion to continue to drink continued in me until I get arrested. There's no stopping it for me. It overcomes me completely. I struggled with me understanding and admitting that that's a spiritual problem. And part of the reason for that is because I don't necessarily have a solid belief in a spirit. You know, when I think about a spirit, I think about a ghost living inside of me. And this thing that is me, but not me. And so how can a ghost be sick? How can a ghost be imperfect or any of that stuff? But as I went through this process, starting way back 10 years ago with step one with another alcoholic, I've had an amazing spiritual journey. And a lot of the reason that I call this a spiritual journey is because I don't know what else to call it. I don't know how else to define the non-physical part of my life today. You know, there's so much that happens that I can't explain, that I can't put a finger on where it comes from or why I get it. You know, so I come in today sober, humbly, because I couldn't do it on my own. If I could have gotten myself sober at any stage of this life that I've had in active addiction, I would have done it, because there was enough pain, enough times that there was enough toilet bowl prayers and back seats of cop cars. There was enough bloody noses and broken knuckles that I had said those prayers over and over again. God, help me not do this again. God, help me not do this again. And if I could have done it on my own, I would have, because I could see the hurt in the people's eyes around me. I could feel that. You know, if I go all the way back to when I was a kid, I'm sensitive to people's energies. I'm sensitive to people's emotions. And when I hurt someone, I know it. And because they love me, I hurt them through hurting myself. And so I wanted to change all that stuff, you guys. I wanted to change the way I treated the people around me. I wanted to change the way that I saw myself. I wanted to fix the things that I had broken. I wanted a different way of living. One of the things that I do believe that I don't really struggle with is that I have one life. I have this one life, that I have one chance at this life, and that I had an entire life of using and drinking. I know what that life is like. I know what that life is about. I know what the street game is and the drug game, and I know how to sell dope, and I know how to fight, and I know how to run, and I know how to hide, and I know how to hustle and all that shit. And I know that it leads me nowhere. And I fear, like, if I would have died that day from that officer or any other day in active addiction, my life would have been wasted. I'm very fortunate to be able to have two lives in one lifetime. What I've been able to do and participate in is a wild ride of ups and downs in sobriety. Finding myself, rediscovering who I am, redefining who I am, letting go of things that don't work for me, grabbing a hold of new ideas, all these things that make me who I am today. You know, I lived most of my life in fear, and I didn't know that until I did an honest and thorough fourth step. In that fourth step, I was able to line out my resentments that I had, which were many. I was able to identify my fears, which were many. And I was able to really dial in and look at my sexual conduct and relationships in general, in the way that I treat people and the way that I have a selfish nature that drives everything that I think about, that drives me completely against my fellow man, because I'm always worried about me. Me, 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 that is my disease. And so being on this side of the table, I'm able to grab a hold of a program and be around people that teach me how to be selfless instead of selfish. The selfish part of this is what keeps me away from you. It's what keeps me from believing in myself. It's what keeps me from believing in God. It's what keeps me from believing that I can have and do things that are wonderful in this life. And so, you know, getting rid of or identifying those fears was huge for me, and moving into being able to identify a power that's greater than myself, that a concept that works for me, that I get to play around with. You know, I want to share a little bit about God and my journey with God, because when I got here 10 years ago, I tried to rely on a God that was given to me at birth. And when we first started this show, I came into this show agnostic atheist. I had no evidence to believe in a power greater than myself. I had several years sober when we first started the podcast, and I was atheistic at the time. I did a lot of spiritual work, and what I came to the conclusion of is that there doesn't really have any evidence to prove the existence of God. Most things could be summed up by coincidence or self-will. Just if I changed my psyche and thought a different way, I could, you know, manipulate my world around me. And what it ended up being was alcoholism at its greatest, me relying on me and me giving myself what I can do for myself, which ended up ultimately at almost 10 years, this was a few months ago, at almost 10 years, completely consumed by untreated alcoholism. You know, I don't have to take a drink to live in alcoholism. I don't have to take a drug to be living like an addict. I have to be completely consumed with myself. And if I'm completely consumed with myself, I'm living in untreated alcoholism. Untreated alcoholism affects everybody in my life negatively, including myself. And so as I went through my period of atheism, I was able to let go of the concepts that I was given at birth, which was a Christian type God. And I tried for a very long time to believe in that God. I heard many times in the rooms and in sobriety in general, you know, fake it till you make it, and which is probably one of the most insulting things that I can hear in sobriety, because I don't get to fake my sobriety. I don't get to fake my recovery. I have to be 100% genuine about this. And when I came to the conclusion that I don't believe in the God that my parents gave me at birth, I thought that I didn't believe in God. I thought that meant that I had one shot at one God. And if I don't believe in that God, then I don't get a God. And if I don't get a God, then I better figure out how to do this on my own with the help of other people. And as I went through that journey, I was able to let myself down without using and drinking, to come to a full understanding that the drugs and alcohol are not the problem. The drugs and alcohol were the solution, right? When I'm able to live alcoholically without taking a drink, when I'm able to be as selfish as I was sober as I was when I was drinking, what am I to do with that? What am I to do with an understanding that it really is me that's broken, that it's not a chemical, that it's not a substance, that it's not a situation, that it's me? What am I to do with that? As I dove in and I started reading through the literature in a very dark place, you know, I got pretty sick, and I ended up almost checking myself into a hospital. And this is with years of sobriety, you guys. This is with me on my journey. I almost checked myself into a hospital. I wanted to get medications. I wanted to change the way that I felt. And what I ended up doing was asking for somebody to pray with me for the first time in a lot of years. And so I humbled myself again before the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the principles that are laid before me. And those three key steps that say, A, I'm alcoholic. And I could not manage my own life. And I ended up in that place in sobriety. I ended up in that place without taking a drink. Alcoholic and unmanageable. B, probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism. I did everything in that dark space that I did for the prior 4 years that worked. I meditated, I exercised, I ate well. I talked about it in meetings. I met with other alcoholics. I worked, I paid my bills. I tried to alleviate it through sex and food, which is not uncommon. I could not get out of that dark space with your help, and I could not get out of that dark space on my own. And so I considered the spiritual as a solution to my mind, and became willing to believe in a power that was greater than myself. I came willing to believe that there is a God and I'm not it, right? And so no human power could relieve my alcoholism, not you, not me, not the group. Those things help, but it did not relieve my alcoholism. And see, God could and would if he ever saw it. And I dove really deep this time into trying to understand what the people in recovery talked about when they said, you can have your own conception of God. You can have your own conception of a power greater than yourself. What does that mean for you? And I had to ask myself, Willie, what does that mean for you? What does it mean for me to have my own conception of God? Does that mean I get to make a God up? Does that mean that I get to control that God? Right? Any of those things. And I came to a place where I understand that my life in sobriety is a gift given to me by grace. It's given me as just because that's what it does. I had to humble myself before my disease and accept that I am loved, that it's okay that I'm flawed and that I'm human, that I will always be alcoholic and that I will always struggle with this type of stuff, but I have a solution for it. You know, grace is a very, very strange thing for me. It's only now that I'm even beginning to understand grace. If there is a God that had created me to have a relationship with me, that wants me to be happy and have all these experiences, and that all those toilet bowl prayers and all those backseat prayers and all those promises that if you get me out of this one and get me out of that one and God, please help me stay sober, led me up to a place where today I am sober for almost 10 years. And I deny the fact that I'm sober and could not do it on my own. Who am I to say that there is no God and that all those things did not add up to what I am today? By the grace of God, I sit here. And when I say grace, I talk about a grace that I understand. I talk about a grace that works for me, a concept that for some reason I finally grabbed a hold of, because in sobriety, I've been able to do some amazing things. You know, I started a family. My children have never seen me drunk. I have a home and a career, this podcast, amazing people in my life, platform around people around the world that I respect and that I love. I have these relationships that are unbelievable. And I have the grace of a power that's greater than myself. And when I talk about that grace, I use this analogy that I heard from another alcoholic. And he said, the grace of God is like a mother breastfeeding her child. That's just what she does. There's no expectation of return. There's no demand for anything else. She just feeds her child because she loves her child. And that's why I'm here today. I'm here sober by the grace of God, because that's what God does. God gets guys like me sober. And gives me a program like this. So, you know, thank you for letting me share. Thank you for all the support on the show. Thank you for, you know, everybody that shared and, you know, all the encouragement. I could not have done any of this without you. So, yeah, thank you.
Because that's what God does.
Or at least has done, right?
Yeah. I mean, even now, like, it's a trip sometimes to hear that terminology come out of your mouth.
Yeah, it had a pretty big reputation around it. The thing is like, it wasn't ungenuine, right? Like
no.
All this stuff has been pretty genuine. And like I said in my story, like, I don't get to fake this stuff.
Right.
Everything was faked out there. And I don't get to fake this. I don't get to fake my sobriety. I don't get to fake my life today. Mm-hmm. It has to be 100% genuine to the best of my ability.
Yeah, and I've always appreciated that about you. And I do like that part of your story where you said the whole fake it till you make it thing. You know? And that's not the first time I've heard that said, you know, that can kill some people.
Yeah.
You know, that really can. I think it's harmful. I think really, instead of fake it till you make it, it should be, you know, ask yourself if you're willing.
Yeah. Keep coming back.
Just keep coming back.
Just fucking keep coming back.
Yeah. But dude, thank you. Yeah,
you're welcome. That was interesting.
Yeah, I bet. it's so amazing because like I've heard your story so many times.
Yeah.
You know, on our show, I've heard you share it on other shows. I've heard you share it in meetings and it's so interesting that still to this day, like, you know, I'm getting new shit.
Yeah.
Each time I hear it.
Yeah. That's why it's important to get out there and share your story as much as possible, man, because there's more than you can share at one time.
Mm-hmm.
There always is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always that same sort of selfishness, right? And you talked again about, feeling right-sized.
Yep.
You never felt right-sized and I so identify with that, because that just, it was like, I think about it now and it's just kind of crazy to like look back on my own life and see these moments where I was like, man, I was such a cocky little fucker.
Yeah.
But then these other moments where it was like, why was I so intimidated in those situations? Yeah,
in the same set of clothes.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I mean, it's cool to know that, you know, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that part of your story as well.
I appreciate being able to share this stuff, you know, this journey so openly and vulnerably, letting people know that like it really is up and down, you know, it's so up and down. It's never linear. Where I'm at today is, you know, I'm expecting another surrender coming up and, you know, at any time, you know, another need for it, you know, there's going to be another level.
Yeah. Now you know to expect it, right?
Yeah. 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 And I know what that means to expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the hope is that I'm not one of those guys that forgets where the solution is at. That's my hope. Yeah. That is definitely my hope, that I never get so well that I forget where the solution is at.
Yeah.
And as we continue to grow on this journey and learn stuff and have things revealed, you know, my hope is that one day I will believe in God the way that other people seem to, that I'll have that unbreakable, undeniable belief, mm-hmm. that seems to work for people. For right now it comes and goes, you mm-hmm. know, and the willingness continues to stay there. Right. So pray on a daily basis, whether I think God's listening or not, you know, taking a look at the fact that, you know, I did pray for sobriety.
Yeah.
And I am sober.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe there is something to that. Maybe I should give credit where credit's due and stop trying to run the show on my own.
You can choose. You can choose to give that credit.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I'm sober by the grace of God, because that's what God does. Why not?
You definitely did it for me.
Yeah, it's better than what I gave myself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, sometimes for me, dude, it is so much easier to see the opposite of things, right? Like, I can always see, like, well, I don't know about God, but I do know that I was fucking it up. Right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
that's very evident.
I can see the contrast sometimes so much easier than I can see, you know, the actual idea or result. But that's just a way for me to reinforce the belief that I have, you know, yeah, of a higher power. I know when I was in charge, I was completely fucking it up.
Yeah.
So now it seems as though, you know, things are operating on a much higher plane.
Yeah.
And I know that's not as a result of Cameron. Because when Cameron was running the show, Cameron was fucking it all up.
Cameron doing for him what he could do for himself.
Right. Exactly. So.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks for letting me share it. Thanks for, you know, listening.
Yeah, it was super interesting. I think in the show notes, we'll put a link to episode one. So if you haven't heard Willie's first story, you can maybe go back and take a listen to his first story and just see, you know, the differences.
Thanks.
And because it really is interesting. And that's another thing, right, is the journey is never over. So our story is going to change.
Yeah.
Hopefully, like if it doesn't, then there's some concern,
yeah,
honestly. And I think that it's important that we remain willing and open, in order to experience and have new ideas that we then get to add to our story.
Yeah.
So thank yep. you.
Thanks for the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it, man. It's been a good show. Thank you, Jordan.
Yeah. Jordan. Thanks
to you, man.
Rylan.
Thanks, Rylan. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks to the viewers.
Listeners.
And listeners.
People that help us out so much.
And the community that we have. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll see you on the other side.
You are worth the work.
The Other Side of Hell is a do-it-yourself podcast. For more information, recovery resources, and contact info, check out our website at theothersideofhellpodcast.com. You can help us spread our message by liking and subscribing, giving us a follow, or a 5-star rating.